Business is simple. It's just not easy. We focus on three things to help you run and grow your business more easily: talent, sales, and how to scale. Can it be that simple? Talent. Develop a robust recruiting, vetting, and training process to help capable people and then help them to become who and what they want to be. Sales. Have a logical go-to-market strategy. Build the sales and marketing structure and plan around it, and then attack and execute the plan with fanatical consistency. Scale. Know where you're going, why you're going. Share with others why they would want to join you. Be clear on who's allowed to join you and what they'll need to do to stay on board. Anticipate roadblocks. Avoid them before you get stuck. And then when you do hit one, and you will, stay calm, problem solve, and find resources to get unstuck. Sounds simple, right? Simple to understand, but not easy to do. Join us as we focus on the tips and tricks and hacks for running a profitable, hyper-growth business. We'll share real-world horror stories and celebrate the victory sagas that will inspire you. This is the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. Hey, welcome. This is the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. I'm your host, Brian Whittington, and today I have Lloyd Wolf joining me. So Lloyd Wolf is with Achieve Business Services, formerly of Wolf Consulting. The goal of today is for us to discuss, how do you build a business from scratch whenever you're not a sales guy? And then how do you scale it to sell it to a profitable exit? And so Lloyd is going to share with us some of his, you know, some where he's stoved his toe and where he's had some good successes. So all of that to say, welcome, Lloyd.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's great to be with you.
Thanks for coming along. So now the first question that I always ask, Lloyd, is, you know, if I'm listening to somebody, I'm going, why in the world should I even listen to you? So why should we listen to you about scaling from nothing to a profitable exit?
Well, I'll say certainly along the way, I found a bunch of ways not to do things right. So happy to share some things that you know, where I messed up royally. And maybe I could save some of your listeners some of those pains. I'm also happy to share through our discussion some of the things that worked really well with me. And hopefully there's no need to reinvent the wheel. Someone can take what worked for someone else and see if it makes sense for them also.
No, I love it. So why don't you give us a little bit of the background? So Lloyd comes out of us from the managed services, so MSP, or right? Is that how you pronounce it? MSP, right? Managed MSP. Services provider. You know, and I knew Lloyd from my old days, and he'll get into this, but I'll give him this. Outsider looking in, not being nice, Lloyd ran one of the most well-run machines you've ever seen. And so that's really why I wanted to have Lloyd on here. So give us some background. How did we get started? How did you grow this thing? And I'll kind of pivot and ask you some questions as we go along. So why don't you start us from the beginning? How did you get started? How did you have the entrepreneurial seizure, I think is what they used to say, Michael Gerber, right? That entrepreneurial seizure. How'd you get started?
Well, I mean, for me, I'm really the classic definition of an accidental entrepreneur.
Yeah.
While working as a young industrial engineer fresh out of college back in 1989, I started a part-time side business writing custom database programs for several small businesses. A few years later, my full-time employer, where I was working as an industrial engineer, closed its doors. And at that time, I just decided to further spread my entrepreneurial wings and increase my attention to the business from part-time to full-time and really never look back. In the decades that followed, that was Wolf Consulting. And the people I was writing custom programs for wanted to run their programs on multiple computers in their offices.
Okay.
So that's how I got into networking computers. And really in the decades that followed, that company, Wolf Consulting, became a leading provider of computer support for small and mid-sized businesses in the greater Pittsburgh area.
Got it. So let me just make sure I got this right. So you had your MBA,
and you came really well funded into this, and you were natural at sales. So is that what I hear?
Yeah, that is 180 degrees from reality, which was, you know, I started it just to make enough money to buy myself the latest computer toy. I had a degree in industrial engineering, not business. So if there's such a thing as getting your MBA on the street, that's where I got my MBA, on the street of, you know, Pittsburgh here, running and growing a business.
Okay, so you were a true founder then. Founder, and this was back, when did you start this?
Sorry, 1989 part-time, and then I went full-time in 1992.
Okay, so this was a while ago. Now this was, you know, just whenever technology, I would say, and you can argue with me better you than me, you would know this better than I would, that technology really started to take off. You know, it was IBM's heyday. Things, personal computers were actually getting on everybody's desk. We're still pre-cell phones kind of thing. Internet wasn't a thing.
I would say, yeah, there was no internet. There was no email. There were no cell phones. We had computers running DOS and WordPerfect and Lotus 1-2-3.
Nice. Okay, so a lot of people might be going, well, this guy, I mean, it's, things are so different today. I mean, so what would you say to those people? How is it that what you did still relates to today?
I mean, I would say that over the course of 30 years with my business, that I had reinvented it at least 4 times over the course of those years. You know, if I had stayed being this business focuses on custom programming for businesses that are running DOS operating system, my business would have ended in the late 1990s. We then pivoted to doing computer networking, and originally it was time and materials computer work. Like someone would call me, break fix work, as they call it. Someone has their computer broke, or they got a network problem. They call, we fix it. I trade hours for dollars, and they don't talk to me again until the next time their computer broke. And we transition into our first version of what was managed services. So now it's called managed services, but we didn't call it managed services back then. It was trying to get into some type of predictable monthly recurring revenue. Right? Trying to have or staff a company based on, we hope just the perfect amount of people will have problems today and call us, is hard to scale a business or run a business or know you have enough employees. So we started having scheduled monthly on-site visits with people where I could know at the beginning of the month how many clients that I have signed up for how many on-site visits this month. A lot easier to know when I needed to hire more people because we had a certain amount of demand. Then we moved into more flat fee services where someone would pay us a flat monthly fee for our services instead of variable based on the amount of time that they used. So I would say certainly what I started the business doing 30 years ago does not apply today, but that would be with any business. I think it's a skill to try and reinvent the business as time goes on so that you don't become a dinosaur.
Yeah, so let's unpack that a little bit. So a couple of things. One, you were SaaS before SaaS was even a thing. So you were doing that monthly reoccurring revenue as you moved and entered into uncharted territories with this new model of MSP from a, you know, break fix type of model. Then two, the other piece that you said is I need to be adaptable, right? So one thing that I don't care what business you're in, you have to be adaptable. Now, being extremely stereotypical here, engineers aren't always the most adaptable people, right? That's why they're engineers. They like to prove out what works and keep with what works. So how did you go with engineering to absolute adaptability in this new business? How did you tie those two together?
Yeah, well, I mean, some of it was just, you know, being fearful of being out of business, right? We had to reinvent ourselves so that we didn't go out. It was more out of necessity, right? Because if I was still writing custom database programs, that's really not something that I could keep doing today. If we were working with a DOS operating system, not something you could do today. If I didn't have some kind of offering for a fixed monthly fee today, I would have been out of business. So some of it was out of necessity. I think what was important or what worked well was trying to find the right balance or triangulate between having our core business and what we did, which was help people with their computers and technology, really taking care of their technology problems for them so they could focus on running and growing their business, and sticking to the lane where we could be. And sometimes that changed over time, so we had to be changeable. But we also picked our lane and I tried not to be everything to every prospective customer. I mean, over the years, I had the opportunity to get into being an internet service provider or being a web hosting company or being a telephone service provider or being a business machine company with copiers and printers. And it was, you know, shiny objects, if you will. And right. It was very tempting to go after these shiny objects, right? Every customer had a telephone. Every customer had an internet connection, at least, maybe not initially, but over time, they all had internet connections. So it was tempting to try and get into a lot of different businesses. But so where we had to really be disciplined was kind of pick our lane, say, what could we really be the best at? And focus our energy on that. Now, it did change over time, a little bit of ebbs and flows, but trying to pick that lane, our core focus, if you will, and stay true to that.
So let's back up on that. So staying in the core lane, or staying in your lane, that niche, if you will, and it's always a joke, riches in the niches, right? So you niched into your core focus, those couple of critical few. But then you also said, we did what we were really good at. We helped our clients with what we're good at, technology, right? So you weren't being all things to all people. So let me ask it this way, and I'm trying to figure out how to ask this without leading the witness, if you will. But what was your focus on whenever you were growing this? Were you focused on revenue? Were you focused on numbers? Were you focused on your client? Were you focused on your employees? Where was the focus, the main focus? I know you have to watch all of those, so don't mishear me, but where was the main focus?
Yeah, I mean, you do have to, you know, focus on all of those, of course. But I mean, the one number in the managed service provider industry that most people look at would be your monthly recurring revenue. I mean, contracted monthly recurring revenue, how much, you know, the business that you get from your clients every month that you know you're going to get every month. That would, if I had to pick the single number. Now, okay. Certainly you have to be profitable because you could have a bunch of business and not make money, in which case you don't have a business after much longer. You have to provide great service, right? Because otherwise they won't keep coming back. But assuming you can run a profitable business, assuming you provide a great product and service, for us, monthly recurring revenue was the number that we were most often focusing on.
Got it. So you were looking at MRR, and with that core focus, so you go back to Jim Collins' Good to Great, that hedgehog. So your hedgehog, your one key thing was MRR. So were you focused on that first, or were you focused on your clients? I guess that.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, I don't know how to say how either one is more important than the other, right? Because if you don't focus on your clients and don't provide a great quality of service, then you could add revenue one month and you're losing it out the back door the next month because they, you know, if you don't provide a great product or service, then they just kind of go away. But I mean, we were focused on what we did, trying to stick in that core focus, do it really well, don't get sidetracked with all kinds of shiny objects that could come our way. But then, you know, being able to adapt and ebb and flow as just the world changed around us. I mean, computer technology, gosh, it just changes so quickly and so often. We had to kind of be regularly shifting and pivoting exactly the tools that we used and the specific services we provided.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, right, if it's said, and I think I agree with this, everybody's in a technology company these days. Because of how critically important all the technology is, everybody's a technology company these days. So there always has to be that constant switching and adapting and improving. So with that massive amount of change, How did you focus on growth, or how did you sustain growth? Because yeah, you had pretty good growth over these years, so doubled in about 5 years or so. But there was, I think you said, a segment of where you really ramped up. But how did you focus on all of those changes and keep up with everything?
You know, when I talk about the business, Brian, over the course of 30 years, I think I experienced all the aspects of entrepreneurship, from some nice successes, as yeah. well as my share of epic mistakes, setbacks, sleepless nights, and crazy long work weeks. I also received many
blessings.
Unfortunately,
those are the ones that you learn from the most, right?
Yeah, right. I think it's probably safe to say I learned more from those mistakes and setbacks than I did the things that came easy. Two blessings that I talk about that, you know, if people ask me what were some, you know, to the degree that I had some success, what are some secrets I would share with them? And there's two that I often talk about the most that I think were very instrumental in for my business. And one of them was in 2010, when I discovered and joined an industry peer group. And via that peer group, I learned about the benefits of getting in a room with other business owners and leaders on a regular basis and sharing with each other our successes as well as our mistakes and failures and setbacks in both business and in life. And the second blessing was when a business friend of mine gave me the Traction book, but written by Gino Wickman, and introduced me to EOS. My leadership the entrepreneurial operating system, and my leadership team and I were excited by what we read and heard. Oh, there you go. And we hired an implementer and began our EOS journey. That was in 2015, and we successfully used the EOS concepts and tools for the last 3+ years I was running the business, and they're still using it today without me in the business. So those were two pivotal points that I'm so thankful came my way.
So let's talk about the peer group first. So you were in business for quite a while. You would think at that point you would have had it figured out, right? You were at it close to 20 years at that point for more or less. So why after 20 years did you join a peer group?
Yeah, it was I just happened to come across someone and got an introduction to a wonderful gentleman named Arlen Sorensen, and he was running this group known as HTG Peer Groups, Heartland Technology Groups. This specific peer group was IT focused, so it was only owners and leaders of IT companies for that particular group. But I'll tell you, I went to that first meeting in April of 2010, and I was so excited. When I came back, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I have no idea how I ran my business for 20 years without being part of some peer group. And in the 10 years that followed, I continue to feel that way. Just the opportunity to be in a room with other business owners and leaders, it was a complete accident and just a blessing from God that I met Arlen and was able to join that peer group. And it's amazing what you can learn by being in the room where people will just tell me what they did that worked and what they did that didn't work. And I don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Got it. So, and that was going to be my question, because that I was not expecting you to say that it had that massive of an impact on you. I'm guessing from what you just said there, the biggest impact was you could hear the life experiences of other business owners and where they stubbed their toe, kind of what we're trying to do here today. And that way you don't have to live through that same heartache, that same sleepless night, because everyone has HR issues. Everybody has financial turmoil. Everybody has sales problems. Everybody has marketing, right? There's nothing new under the sun. So instead of you figuring that out on your own, you're able to find out what other people did and avoid that or repeat what's worked for them. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. I mean, in all facets of business, I mean, if you're looking at marketing, or you're looking at sales, or you're looking at operations, or service delivery, making your product or service, whatever that might be, or you're looking at finance or administration or human resources. I think all of our businesses have people, or overwhelmingly most of our businesses have people, and just trying to lead and manage those people, and we've got clients and customers, and we've got former clients, and we've got employees and people and former employees, and we're trying to recruit employees. And there's so much wisdom in that room where people can share what worked or didn't work. And in the kind of the go-giver world, I would say I went into the room sharing with everyone else in the room what had worked for me or what had not worked for me. You know, what were my best successes and what were my most horrible failures? And by sharing that, I in turn had 10 other people in the room who shared their successes and failures with me. So, you know, I gave a lot, time, energy, but I got back 10 times in return whatever I gave.
Nice. So I used to be a Air Force pilot. Well, I was Air National Guard, so hopefully that still counts. And whenever we would walk out to the tarmac to the airplane, they would have this Barnstormer. If you remember Barnstormers, they were the dual wing airplanes that used to do all kinds of crazy things back in the 20s or 30s, right? And they would they had this picture of an airplane that flew into a barn. And it said, you won't live long enough to learn everything on your own. So that's why we debriefed calls or debrief missions and post-debriefed missions. So it sounds like the same thing here. You got to learn from others so you didn't die hit in the barn.
Absolutely. I mean, and it was a combination of formal meetings. I mean, in my case, we got together in person for 2 to 3 days every quarter. There are other groups that have more of a meeting cadence of, say, once a month in your local city or something, where you might meet for a day. But, you know, a lot of what I learned and a lot of what I shared happened in those formal meetings. But I'd also say an equal amount of what I shared and also what I learned came from outside the formal meetings, just the friendships and the business associations that you develop. I would pick up the phone or send an email message to people in my peer group regularly, maybe not every day, but certainly every week. I'm just answering their questions or they're answering my questions. This became my go-to philosophy of, I don't necessarily have to make this decision without knowledge. Like, if it was something I'd not faced before, yeah, I could get input from half a dozen people in, you know, just a few minutes or a few hours, and certainly make a better decision than I would have ever made if I was on an island on my own trying to run this business solo.
So, and I want to hit on this real quick, because this is a massive piece that we need to acknowledge. We as business owners, whether founder or president or CEO or whatever the case may be, oftentimes, especially if you're newer, and for my younger managers, younger leaders on this call, realize you're not supposed to know everything. You won't, you can't. And so one of the critical things that I typically look for in a really good leader is what we call intellectual humility. It's being strong enough, confidence enough that I can do this job and I have a positive expectation of winning. However, being intellectually humble enough to be able to take input from others, coaching, training, and always be willing to grow. And these peer groups are you have to have that intellectual humility to be able to execute on the peer group or be willing to hear out a consultant or a coach or whatever the case may be, because no offense, you don't know everything and you're not as smart as you think you are, nor am I, nor is anyone. And the sooner we realize that, the sooner we can get help and start speeding up the process to success. So I don't know, Lloyd. I mean, that's my viewpoint. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
No, I would wholeheartedly agree. I would probably add two things. You know, one of the things that the peer groups also gave me was some accountability. I mean, as the sole owner of the business, for most of the years. I mean, later, the last few years of the business, I'd mentioned that we implemented EOS, the entrepreneurial operating system.
Right.
And there was more sharing that went on with both my leadership team at that point and with the rest of the company, where they knew more about what the plans were for the business. What was our 10-year target? What was our 3-year vision? What's our 1-year plan, or 3-year picture, 1-year plan? But before that, going into my peer group and telling them what were my plans for the business, they were some of the few group, a small group of people that could hold me accountable. I mean, if I came into a quarterly meeting and said, I'm gonna do X, Y, and Z by our next meeting, I would have to come back and they would ask me if I did X, Y, or Z. And there's not that many people that could give me, quite frankly, the beating I deserved if I didn't get it done.
Yeah.
Right. Because before then, it was all just in my head. I wouldn't share with my staff what the plans were. So if we did it, great. I threw a party for myself. If we didn't hit it, no one really knew. So right. The peer group was helped with accountability. The second thing I'll mention was within the peer group, the different departments started to establish relationships with other people also. So the gentleman that ran my service department established a peer relationship with the other service leaders. The person that ran my account management team developed a relationship with the other folks that were leading account managers. The person that ran my finance team developed relationships with the other finance leaders, and they developed their own kind of departmental peer groups. You know, so it wasn't just, I don't mean to say it was solely for my involvement was at the owner CEO level, but we were able to roll that down even to the next level in the organization, that those people got the same benefits of being part of a peer group.
Yeah. So you hear a lot of this, this idea of a coaching culture, right? This idea of a culture of mentoring. And so a couple of things, not only does the leader need to have that intellectual humility, but all of the people need that same intellectual humility, or this won't work. If they can't take feedback, if they can't have a quick feedback loop or adapt or change with you, then you're not going to scale and grow the way that you'd like. So that's a great, great point there too. Right. But let's pivot this, keeping an eye on the clock here. Let's pivot this quickly to you said entrepreneurial operating system was another big one. So just full disclosure, I'm an implementer. I'm not a professional implementer like Lloyd is. So if you need professional implementation, call Lloyd. But how did you discover it? And why did you say, hey, this is pretty good?
Yeah, I think I was mentioning earlier, a friend of mine gave me, you held yours up, so I'll hold mine up just so we're...
Here you go.
Gave me the Traction book. And actually, I think I still have the, let's see, I'm on the video here. Still, my friend gave me this particular Traction book, and in it, he wrote me a note that said, great spending time with you. Enjoy this book. I feel it has a recipe for further success.
Nice.
And gosh, it certainly did for me. So I read the book, Traction. I gave copies to what became my leadership team. They liked what they read and heard also. So we hired an implementer and began our journey kind of early 2016 or so. And we used the EOS concepts and tools for the last 3+ years I was running the company.
Okay.
And they still use it today. One of the things, I mean, now that I'm in the second phase of my professional career, again, I think we mentioned I had sold my ownership in the business to an investment firm at the end of 2017. I stayed on as the CEO of the company through the spring of 2019, and then I retired from the company. The company was celebrating its 30th year anniversary, so the kind of the timing felt right to be celebrating my retirement from the company. Yeah. So I did.
Well, let's pause you right there. So when you sold, right, exit multiple is everything. And there's a few things that can help us to increase our exit multiple. So whether we're selling our exit to a private equity, whether we're doing it, to get more investments from a VC or whatever the case may be, private investors, because you also do, and you also invest in companies. So what are some things that you think that maybe EOS or what you were doing with the peer group that you did to help that exit multiple?
Yeah, I mean, different people sometimes use these words. So systems and processes. I mean, having systems and processes in place, we could have been running the business kind of willy-nilly or just making it up as we went along. Every one of our, we had 40 people in the company at the time that I exited and left. You know, every person could have been doing things their own way. But I mean, we were very, and that's one of the things I liked about EOS, because it talks about the six key components of the business, and the fifth key component is process. So having systems and processes in place, so there was a Wolf Consulting way of doing marketing. There was a Wolf Consulting way of talking with a prospective client and seeing if they're a fit, and if so, helping them convert into being a client. Once they became a client, there was a defined Wolf Consulting way of providing our product or service. It didn't really matter. We all had our own personalities, but it didn't matter which of our team members were the primary folks that you worked with. You got the same service, whether they worked with you or another member of our team worked with you. We had the same technology and same software tools that we worked with across all of our company.
Yeah.
So systems, and all the way down to the financial side of things, having great, you know, financial systems and processes, so the books are clean, easily reportable. Hiring systems and processes, so human resource, you know, recruiting, hiring, retaining great employees. So the systems and processes, I think, is a very important one.
Yeah. So, and I mean, if you think about it, there's only six, maybe 10 total processes that you're going to have that you get down. But what Lloyd did is he nailed the most of them, right? If I don't have the right people on the team, if I don't know how to track what they're doing, if I don't know how to take me out of the company, because if I am the company, then I don't have a company, right? I have a paid audience around me and they're not going to buy me. They're going to buy a list. And that's not nearly as expensive or as valuable as what having a company that is not, and you said this earlier, trading dollars for hours. It's a company run by people that don't need me. And one of my points that I always suggest, and Lloyd, I'd be interested in your thought on this one, is my leadership ability is directly correlated to how much I'm needed. The less I'm needed, the more I'm wanted, and the more valuable I am.
So for me, I mean, EOS took care of a lot of things in our business and really helped us on our journey, strengthening what Gino Wickman talks about is the six key components of your business. For me, I was definitely a micromanager. Okay. I think part of it is in my DNA. Part of it is because it was, quote, my company. Part of it was because I did every job in the company over those, you know, 27, 26 plus years before we got EOS. And, you know, quite frankly, I thought I could do it all better. You know, I did it all pretty well. And so therefore I'm the only person who can do it well.
Clearly.
It was through that EOS process where we talk about delegating and elevating to your unique ability, to where I was really stifling the business by the bottleneck, by if everything had to run through Lloyd.
Right.
And it was a journey to get there. It wasn't just a light switch, but to the point where, you know, service, the first one for me was service delivery. That was the easiest one to hand off. So service delivery started to run without Lloyd. I was no longer the smartest technical person. There were people way smarter than me delivering our service. Then I turned over finance to, you know, found a competent person who did a great job and I gelled with, and she was able to start running finance. I was eventually able to let go of account management, to where I wasn't managing accounts for, you know, when we started the company, I was the only account manager, and then added another account manager and we kind of split it. But there then came a time that there were hired account managers and I was not an account manager. You know, I wasn't the first person touching base with clients. And the last piece of the puzzle that I ultimately had to let go of was business development, to where, you know, I would get a call or a meeting and find out we signed a new client,
yeah.
Just like the rest of the company, that I wasn't actually part of it.
Nice.
And it was a journey over time, but really, you know, letting go of the vine, as sometimes we say,
right.
That took work for me. And that was definitely something that was very important that EOS helped us with, that helped me with, like the creating of the leadership team, defining the major roles in the company, making sure I had the right people in the right seats, and then getting out of their way and letting them do their job well.
Yeah. Well, let's quickly hit this. And I mean, super, super quickly, because I want to be cognizant of your time here. Let's hit the six pieces of that process that you're talking about without the sub bullets, but what are those six segments that people are going to really want to focus in on and reach out to you if they want more information?
Yeah. I mean, the six key components of my business and really of any business, there's the vision component, making sure that the leadership team and ultimately the entire company is on the same page with where they're going and how they plan to get there. There's the people component, making sure you have right people in the right seats. There's the data component, running the business on data and facts and figures rather than just the feelings and emotions that often drive decision-making in an entrepreneurial company. The fourth key component is the issues component, getting really good at calling out issues as they arise and solving them and knocking them out of the way for the greater good and for the long term of the company. The process component, having all of your core processes simplified, documented, and followed by all. And the traction component, having some type of system in place to be able to make consistent traction and gain traction on your vision. Because for most entrepreneurs, the vision goes unrealized. They have a dream for doing something, but they don't make progress on it. So the sixth key component is that traction component, making sure that you're consistently executing on that vision every week, every month, every quarter, every year.
Yeah. So we always ask, hey, what's one resource that you would recommend? So clearly it's peer accountability, peer groups, and traction, the entrepreneurial operating system. Any other hacks or tricks or skills that you would want to impart that we should be aware of that will help us to go from startup to successful exit?
Yeah, certainly those two, the peer groups and EOS, focusing on that, your core focus would be, I guess, the other thing that I'd add in there. It's quite easy when you get some clients and they ask you for other things, or when you're trying to grow a business and you're talking with a prospective client who's got pain and who's got money to give you, but it's not what your core focus is. It's tempting and challenging to not try and solve their problem and take their money. It's try and stay disciplined and focus on, you know, what is your target market client?
Right.
And what is the target, you know, what is your core focus for the product or service that you provide? And not try and take on clients that are outside of your target client profile.
And it's so easy to do. It's like a siren calling you into the rocks, right? So not doing that, absolutely. So any other resource that you would recommend, any book or podcast or anything that you would recommend?
Well, I mean, we've talked about the Traction book already. It's by Gino Wickman. There's a companion book to it that I like also. It's called Get a Grip. It's by Gino Wickman and Mike Payton. Payton was one of the folks who trained me in my EOS training. That's more of a fable type story.
Okay.
And that's really one of my favorite books.
Okay, great. Now, how about trends? What do we need to watch out for? You've been trying to read the tea leaves through trends for the last 30 plus years. So what do you see trends coming down the pike? What do we need to watch out for?
I generally try to stay away from like the fads, if you will, and kind of stick to the tried and true techniques. So
100% agree with that.
I'm not sure if that's dodging your question or not. Like,
maybe
it's
a little
kind
bit,
of saying like
can,
try not to, you know, not the fad of the month or the fad of the year or the latest trend. And I mean, sometimes there's just, you know, putting your nose down to the grind, you know, grinding through things, the 20-mile march, as they say.
So let me save you here. Ready? So what you're saying is the trend is Nothing new under the sun. Keep working hard. Put your systems and processes in place, because the purple unicorn, or whatever they want to call that, in the SaaS world has gone. And they're talking about the way of the camel now, that you better run a good, profitable, successful business if you want to have a successful exit. So love it. All right.
If I had said it that way, that's what I meant to say. Yes, that's
well,
perfect.
That's what I understood.
It's just a 20-mile march, working on, making progress on a consistent basis. No magic pills or silver bullets out there.
There really isn't. So it's just running a good business. So, all right. Well, Lloyd, I can't thank you enough. So let's wind this down. So who should reach out to you? How should they do it? And why should people reach out to you?
Well, I mean, if there was nowadays, I decided that I was going to become a professional EOS implementer. I work as a facilitator, as a teacher and a coach to help other companies implement EOS in their organization. So if someone was interested, if they're the business owner or leader of a company with say 20 to 250 or so employees, and they'd like to learn more about EOS, they could reach out to me. They can find me on LinkedIn, or my website is achieve-services.com. And I'd be happy to spend some time with them, sharing with them a little bit more about EOS. And even if they didn't end up implementing EOS, or we didn't end up working together, I'm confident they'd walk away with a nugget or two that they could use to help with running and growing their business.
Love it. So that is Lloyd Wolf, everyone. Wolf with no E, two L's obviously in Lloyd. So Lloyd Wolf, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it. So until the next time, this has been the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. See you, everyone.